It's become quite a common view that during the decades following the life and the death of Jesus, Jesus experienced a kind of status inflation, if I can call it that. Can you figure out what I mean by that? That is, those who actually knew him thought of him as a fine, upright man, but nothing more. Then the stories get passed around and souped up a bit, and after a bit, people are talking about him as a great prophet, no less. The next generation, they want to spice things up a bit, and so they start making claims about him going around doing miracles, healing the sick, raising the dead, until eventually the story gets so completely out of control that they started talking about Jesus being God himself. Well, it's certainly a theory, but it's quite tricky to make the theory stick. Why? Well, because wherever you point the finger, whoever or whatever you hold responsible for inflating the status of Jesus of Nazareth in that way, there are problems. Quite major problems, in fact. Was it just a case of Chinese whispers? Did the facts about Jesus get corrupted as they were passed around in the wild? Well, it can't be that, because the biographies of Jesus started appearing in the 60s AD. That is barely 30 years after the death of Jesus. In an oral culture, that is absolutely nothing. And contrary to what some people believe, they were written by or based upon the eyewitness testimonies of people who actually knew Jesus firsthand. Was it a case of deliberate spin then? Did the writers of those biographies of Jesus that we call the Gospels, did they intentionally twist the facts a bit? Did they put words into Jesus' mouth? Did they exaggerate the kind of things that he got up to during his life? Well, that is theoretically possible, but on the balance of probabilities, it's not very likely. After all, many of those early followers of Jesus went to their deaths for sticking by the stories that they had related. And in any case, if there were mistakes, any number of people could have stood up and said, "No, that's not how it happened. I was there." But it seems they didn't. So did mistakes just kind of creep in after the Gospels were written? Could the copying process be responsible for this status inflation kind of thing? Well, again, that's not really credible either. The reality is the Gospels are accepted by scholars today as the most reliable, best preserved texts in the entire ancient world, and by quite a large margin. And that's because there are simply so many of them that went around the regions in so many different paths and have survived to today, that we can check them against each other in minute detail and track down every last possible error. You may find it interesting to compare the manuscript evidence for the New Testament documents, including the Gospels, with the evidence for other ancient world documents, which we accept as reliable. I spent years of my life studying this thing, so I'm going to inflict it on you, whether you like it or not. Take Julius Caesar's Gallic Wars, for example. 10 manuscript versions have survived to the present day. But that's enough to be pretty reliable. Plato's Tetralogies? Well, we've got 7 manuscripts. That's all right. When it comes to Homer, you're in a different league there. You've got 643 manuscripts have survived, making it the second most reliable text of the ancient world. Now, I haven't included the New Testament in that chart there for the simple reason that it would not be possible to fit it on the screen. In fact, it wouldn't be possible to fit it in this building. We actually have, including Latin and other translations, we have 24,000 manuscripts of the New Testament or parts of it. It's enough to have massive confidence in the accuracy of our texts. This kind of theory is great for selling books, this status inflation thing, and making good TV documentaries and so on. But when you actually do the research, and think it through, it's hard to make the theory of status inflation stick. And what that means is that if you want to investigate Jesus, who he is, or at least who he was, then the gospel accounts are by far and away the most obvious places to go, because they do provide a reliable window into the life of this intriguing character. Towards the end of one of the Gospels, the Gospel of John, there's an incident recorded for us where one of the people who knew Jesus best was challenged to think more deeply about the identity of Jesus. He was a skeptic, this man. He didn't take anything on trust. In fact, down the ages, he's become known to the world as Doubting Thomas. But having thought it through, he changed his mind and addressed Jesus in person in words which would have been regarded as blasphemous by many of his day. My Lord and my God. Now, what was it that had led him to that conclusion about Jesus? Why did he change his mind like that so dramatically? Well, the immediate thing was that he'd just seen Jesus alive, despite having seen him killed just a few days earlier. That's going to give anyone cause for a bit of a rethink. But actually, he'd had much more than that to go on. Over the previous 3 years, he'd seen with his own eyes some of the things that Jesus did. He'd seen Jesus just click his fingers and have grown men of all sorts give their entire careers away in order to follow him. Blue-collar primary producers, white-collar accountants, the works. He'd seen Jesus just click his fingers and have debilitating diseases vanish away into thin air. Short-term viral conditions, long-term gynecological conditions, deafness, paralysis. He'd seen Jesus just click his fingers and have supernatural forces in an instant lose their grip over individual people's lives. He'd seen Jesus just click his fingers and have nature itself at his beck and call. You couldn't take him to a picnic without him producing sandwiches out of a hat, which wouldn't go down too badly today. You couldn't couldn't accompany on a sailing trip without him taking over the controls of international weather conditions. You couldn't even take him to a morgue, for goodness sake, without him causing a scene and bringing somebody back to life. Thomas had seen amazing things. You can read them for yourself in the Gospels. In fact, I'd recommend that you do. But as well as seeing what Jesus had done, things that to his mind only God can do, Thomas had heard some of the things that Jesus had said, and in all honesty, they sounded like things that only God can say. Your sins are forgiven, he said. If you want to know what God looks like, he said, look at me. If you've seen me, you've seen God. Your eternal destiny hangs on me. Now, those are big words, aren't they? Really big words, especially for somebody with a reputation for humility. You know, gentle Jesus, meek and mild. For Doubting Thomas, who knew Jesus in the flesh, in the end they rang true. They made sense. But you and I will have to make up our own minds. The title for today's talk was Jesus, Good, Bad, or Mad. Well, as you ponder the claims of Jesus, and I hope you will ponder them, read a gospel, investigate, do your research, as you ponder those claims, it may be that you do conclude that he was mad, a delusional megalomaniac. You may decide that he was bad, deliberately misleading people and misrepresenting himself. And I can see how you could come to either of those two conclusions, to be honest, and I'd respect that. Ironically, though, given the title, One thing I doubt she'll be able to do anymore is to think of him as good, a fine teacher, an inspiring example, something like that. It's not hard to see what people are doing when they label Jesus in that way. They're saying that very line I opened up with. Can't we just be friends? Can't I just have Jesus in my circle of indirect positive cultural influences, something like that, and just leave it there? And the answer is, I'm afraid to say, at least as far as I can see, you know, I'm not infallible, so maybe you can find a way through, but the answer as far as I can see is simply no. Not if you want to be coherent, logical, reasonable. You can't look at the things Jesus said and did and conclude that he was simply good. If he wasn't delusional or dishonest, that is. If he wasn't delusional or dishonest, if he was telling the truth about himself, then I'd like to suggest the only coherent response is Thomas's one. To look at Jesus and to say, my Lord and my God.